It's time for another episode of Corner of the Galaxy from the Box, the show that gets you behind the scenes of the LA Galaxy and into the minds of soccer reporters and MLS experts. Your hosts for the day are Corner of the Galaxy's Josh Gessman and LA Times soccer reporter Kevin Baxter. Let's start the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com. Josh Gessman, Mr. Kevin Baxter here with you once again, coming off the LA Galaxy's 2-2 draw with the Houston Dynamo on Saturday. The LA Galaxy finally played a home game at StubHub Center in the actual main stadium. It's only been 42 days since the last time they did that, so a lot of fun over the weekend, an interesting game for so many reasons, and we're, of course, going to get into that. It's high on our list of priorities, but we also want to get you ready for that Colorado game as well coming up this weekend. So a lot of stuff to go over, a lot of things to cover, but let's check in with Mr. Kevin Baxter first. Kevin, how are you doing?
All right. You just missed it. There was an exciting two-leg foosball series here between my wife and I. We just played in the office here. I, of course, was the Galaxy, and she must have been DC United the way she was playing. That's all. This foosball thing is so realistic. You know, there's like two on ours. It's a small table, so there's two sticks with three players each. Absolutely no midfield, just like the Galaxy. So that was great. Clement Diop scored two goals, by the way, which is easy to do for a goalie in foosball. But anyway, so the Galaxy riding high in foosball as well.
That's good to know that they are continuing their winning ways on the foosball table as well. There was no spinning, though, right? You play by the real rules, no spinning.
Actually, I have to admit, I spun a little bit at the end, but I think I was just showing off. I had it well in hand. I was well up. We weren't even counting away goals in the two-leg series, so I showed off a little bit at the end. I shouldn't have done that. I didn't score on the spinning. There were a number of own goals, as you might imagine.
Yes.
But again, you know, like I said, realistic, no midfield at all, so I really felt it was the real Galaxy out there.
All right, very good. Good to hear. All right, the LA Galaxy, of course, the 2-2 draw with the Houston Dynamo. AJ De La Garza, Leonardo back in StubHub Center for the first time since they had left the LA Galaxy. So a little side note, interesting tidbit about that. You can go up on cornerofthegalaxy.com and see a story I wrote about those two guys coming back. But, you know, a very, first of all, a controversial finish to the game is it might be a good place to start. But even when you look at the lineup that was announced, Kevin, I told everybody about 10, 15 minutes before the lineup was announced that Bradley Diallo had picked up an injury in training and wouldn't be able to dress for that game and wouldn't be available to even start for that game. It was Hugo Arellano who ended up playing on the back line. But the LA Galaxy, Kevin, only had 17 players dressed of the 18 that they are allowed. And I said right off the bat, I think you and I were talking, I don't remember a team ever having 17 players instead of 18 players on it. It was an auspicious start to the game.
Well, I talked to some guys out of training today. I talked to Brian Rowe and Daniel Steris, and neither one of them could ever remember playing in a game where the team went out with less than the maximum number of allowed players. And Steris was really, being a center back, was a little bit concerned about the fact there were no defenders on the sideline. So they were going to play the whole way with the four guys that they had on the back line. And he said he had never seen that and was a little worried about it. Even Kurt Onofo said he's never coached a game where he had 17 players. And I don't think we knew at the time. I found out today at training that it was Raul Mendiola who was also picked up a knock. They were very sort of circumspect about what exactly happened to him. I did not see him at training, so I don't know how serious that is. But he was the 18th player, would have been out there, but was not able to go. And also the funny thing is Arellano, who made his major league debut and was the guy who had to start because of all the injuries. Guess what happened to him? He got an injury. If you remember, he was down for quite some time in the second half, got hit in the face with the ball. He was going to have x-rays today to see if the nose was broken. He didn't think it was. He thought everything was fine. But I just thought that was indicative of where the Galaxy are, that guy makes his major league debut because of injuries and gets injured.
Yeah, no, that is exactly where it was. I actually was following or at least trying to find out his status after the game, and the Galaxy said initially they didn't think it was broken, which is what I put out on Twitter after the game. But you would understand that if they're still swelling and they have to wait for the swelling to go down to even take an x-ray, if he does have a broken nose, that raises questions about his eligibility to play on Wednesday and whether or not the LA Galaxy would have enough players to even begin with again. So So it's all coming back. I mean, you look at the number of players who were missing from this game. Kevin, you and I, before the game, had gone over the list of players who were out, at least guys who would have been starting had they been available, and there were 8 players missing for this Houston Dynamo game, all right? You had Yella Van Damme, who was out because of yellow card suspension. You had Giovanni Dos Santos out on international duty with Mexico in the Confederations Cup. You had Daniel Steris, Brian Rowe, Sebastian Legette, Baju Husidic, Bradley Diallo, and Jermaine Jones all out because of injury. This is a ridiculous number of players to be missing, and it just goes. I mean, you know, there was almost a question of who you could even bring into the game, who was going to be sitting on the bench. Again, there were 17 players, so you had 6 other players besides the 11 starters who were available to come into this game. It's head-scratching at the amount of injuries that the Galaxy have picked up so far.
Well, and you could make an argument, and some of the people out at training today, some of the players are jokingly, we're making the argument that the guys on the sidelines were, it was actually a better lineup than the one that was on the field. And you know, certainly, again, you can make the argument for that. But there is some hope going forward. As you mentioned, Yella Van Damme will be back. We're not going to see Gio till after the July 4th game, is my feeling. Mexico will play through July 2nd there, and he's not going to fly back from Russia and play July 4th. So we won't see him until the Manchester United scrimmage at the earliest. Jermaine Jones and Daniel Steris both look pretty good. Kurt Onofo said they are not going to make the trip to Colorado, but he's really hopeful they'll be able to play Saturday. Brian Rowe told me he was supposed to be out 6 weeks, and he said he's at 3 weeks right now, and he feels like he's ahead of schedule. So, you know, you could look at him for that July 19th game with Vancouver, perhaps. Obviously, Baggio and Sebastian are still long-term. We're probably not going to see them until the end of July or mid-August, even in training. Diallo was not at training today. Kurt Onofo said at least the next couple of weekends, and he used the term weekend, so I think he was looking at it as games. So that would mean no Sporting Kansas City, no San Jose, probably no Real Salt Lake. So we may not see Diallo until Vancouver. So the guys are coming back. They're coming along. They're progressing at the rate that they had all hoped. It's going to take some time.
Yeah, it is. It's all about timing and sort of hoping to get everybody back. I reiterated one of my favorite things to say because somebody in the press box said it once again. When this team gets healthy, that they will, you know, they're going to get a lot of players back. They could be a good team. And I said there is no rule and there is no certainty that this team will ever be healthy. And so that's sort of what you're building off of right now. I mean, you look at where the LA Galaxy are right now. 14 games played, Kevin. They're an average team right now. Whether or not you want to take the injuries into account or not, they're an average to below average MLS team. And that's not exactly where the LA Galaxy should be. And in this game, with the players they had available, looking at everything that happened and everything that sort of came through, you should be ecstatic as Galaxy fans. They were able to salvage a point out of this game. I think there's a lot of people who are of the opinion that you shouldn't celebrate a draw, Kevin, and I can understand that sort of that want for better from your team. But when you looked at with all the players who were injured, if you looked at what they basically were able to start with on the field, Kevin, I don't think you can be upset with the performance that they put out there in this particular case. I think that there is a positive side to them being able to get a draw, even though it was at home, even though it wasn't a win, that with the amount of players they had injured, that this was probably an okay performance.
Well, even more than that, and first of all, with the injuries, the way the team is looking at it, the players I talked to today, especially Jermaine and Steris, now Steris is dealing with a hamstring, as is Diallo. Hamstrings are notoriously fickle. They can follow you for months, for years, for an entire career. And so you have to be very careful that you don't come back too soon. Steris says once you injure the hamstring, it is always injured. And what you have to do is you have to just strengthen it and the muscles around it to take some of the pressure off. And that takes time. So the players I talked to, the injured ones, said, look, we're not going to rush back. Yes, we know the team needs players right now. They need bodies. But we're not going to rush back because if we come back at 95%, we're hurting the team. We can't play at 100%, and there's a chance we're going to hurt ourselves again. We're going to be out even longer. So the players are of the mind of, let's get this right. Let's take care of it now. The players that are playing, they look at it and say, look, you know, we just got a draw. We have a 7-game MLS unbeaten streak with all these injuries. And the young guys, like Nathan Smith, these guys are getting valuable, important MLS minutes So when the veterans come back and those guys go back to the bench, all of a sudden it's not a young bench. It's an experienced bench, guys that have got some real minutes. And that's how the team's looking at it. Now, as far as the draw, I talked to Yella Von Dam about that, and I said, you know, the team has really changed a lot since that Chicago game with the unbeaten streak and the confidence and everything else. And he said earlier in the season, that Houston game, he said, no way we win that game or get a draw. He said, we lose that game. Don't even think twice about it. We would have lost that game. He said, guys kept going until the last minute. And he said, we deserved a minimum of a point out of that game, meaning that the character and the heart they showed in coming back. Some people look at that and say, well, Alessandrini was offside. It's a cheap point. Yella was looking at it the other way. It's like, we never quit. We deserved what that point that we earned.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's something to that. There is a mindset change. You do see it when you're around the guys. You do see it when you're talking to them in the locker room afterwards. There is sort of this, hey, you know, we're feeling a lot better than we were. That's for sure. So I get some of that, Kevin, and I get it. In this particular game, though, judging the players that were on the field, there were some really there were some glaring issues that I think sort of have to be put out there. I mean, the first thing, and you even joked about it in your intro, you know, no midfield whatsoever, was that Joao Pedro and Rafa Garcia in the center of the midfield just had no possession, and the midfield itself had no possession outside of Emmanuel Boateng and sometimes Roman Alessandrini and those two guys combining together to really hold the ball up. If you looked at this, and in the first half, the only chance the LA Galaxy had, Kevin, was the goal that they scored. That was it, and it came on a counterattack. It was a wonderful, beautiful play by Roman Alessandrini to hold the ball up, to turn, and to find Emmanuel Boateng streaking down the left-hand side, and then Emmanuel just turned on the jets. Ima does his thing, puts the ball in the back of the net, and that sort of worked out. I will say that on that play, I think it was the best run that Jack McInerney had all night. He at least drew a defender for about 2.5 seconds that didn't allow them to all collapse onto Alessandrini. So it bought him just a little bit of time as he took to the far sideline and ran away from Boateng, and that sort of allowed things. But other than that, you look at the two players who played the absolute best on the team on that night. For me, and I'll even extend it to three players, I think Ashley Cole played excellent. I think Emmanuel Boateng was outstanding. And I think that Roman Alessandrini was outstanding. And outside of those three guys, you could take everybody else and forget about them, because I don't think anybody had a positive performance in that game.
Well, everybody at training today was really oohing and aahing all about Ashley Cole and talking about how he deserved to be on the All-Star team. No, nobody really thought that he would make it, because it's, you know, there's not really a lot of statistics to quantify the performance of a left back. And unless you see them every day, you don't know how good Ashley Cole has played. But certainly he deserves a shot at that game. One more note about Yella talking about the game. Again, saying we would not have gotten a draw in that game a couple of weeks ago. He also looked at it and said, look, we're playing the number two team in the Western Conference. They're at full strength. We're down eight guys, and we still manage a draw. And granted, it was at home, where the Galaxy should have an advantage, although this year you don't know. So that was an interesting take, the fact that they're playing a full-strength team that's much higher than them in the standings. Another thing, too, and, you know, we just talked about stats for defenders. A lot of these stats, I don't know how they're put together, and I do question a lot of the statistics, but they're there on the score sheet. So just take a look at a couple of them. Arellano, in his first game, he was second on the team with 69 touches. Now, I know defenders are supposed to have a lot of touches, but he had 69 touches. He had 61 total passes. His passing accuracy was above 90%. Nathan Smith was first on the team in touches at 77. His passing accuracy was 82%. He also had three tackles. So, again, I think you take a lot of these statistics with a grain of salt, but compared to everybody else, there's the numbers. Those two guys, the two youngest players, had a really good game. If you look at the numbers, and you know, they weren't Ashley Cole and they didn't dominate the game. They weren't Alessandrini, but you know, they put those guys in a tough spot with all those injuries and nobody on the bench. They're operating without a net. They screw up, turn an ankle, make a mistake. Too bad. You're out there for the rest of the 90 minutes. Actually, when you look at the numbers, they played pretty well.
Yeah, it's not bad. And you look at the way that Smith was attacked on the night, and Houston is the first team that I've seen that has actually tried to go after Ashley Cole. I think they decided that wasn't the best idea. Ashley Cole trying to get into the offense a lot as well, and I think he needed to, again, because the midfield presence wasn't there. Jossy Zardes was playing in the midfield for really one of the first almost attempted 90 minutes that he's really gotten the start at the midfield, and you could see that, again, he was not up to the pace of the game. We learned today that, according to Kurt Anolfo, that Jossie Zardes was fighting some sort of stomach bug during the Saturday game. And so, again, I don't know how we judge his performance, but if you remember, Zardes only played about 60-plus minutes right around there and got subbed out. And a lot of people were sort of looking at that as saying that that might be a step in the right direction for Kurt Anolfo, getting Jossie Zardes off the field, who hasn't been playing well. And again, in this game, I don't think you could say that he did anything noteworthy whatsoever. He certainly didn't combine well with either Ramon Alessandrini or Jack McInerney, and Jack McInerney was MIA for most of the game anyway. So it goes to show you that, yes, they survived this, and if you look at it, Kevin, and I think you and I were even talking on the phone earlier today, if you look at it, they played pretty poorly when you put it all together, and you know, throw out the injuries for a second, just the team that was on the field and the team that played pretty poorly, still got a draw out of it. That's not a horrible thing. You add in Yella Von Dahm's perspective on they're playing, you know, the number two team in the Western Conference, that it starts to add up and at least gives you a little bit more understanding, perhaps, or some perspective, perhaps, on what this team's mindset is as they continue to go down, and maybe putting everything into perspective, what this season has been so far for the Galaxy, and the fact that they're only, you know, one spot out of the red line in the playoffs might be a minor miracle.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at championship teams, and I'm not saying this is a championship team yet, we're not even in the mid part of the season, and they're still out of the playoff picture if the season were to end today. But teams that do well win games or get points from games where they're outplayed, and that's what happened this weekend. The Galaxy were outplayed, and they wound up with a point. And that's really important that you don't drop points even when you're outplayed. I do think you take that away from you do take a positive away from that. The fact that they got a point, as Alessandrini said afterwards, we've got to stop celebrating draws at home. We need to start winning at home. And Kurt Anolfo talked a little bit about that today as well. One thing about Alessandrini and one thing that a takeaway from this game with McInerney and Jack McBean, I think, being sort of largely ineffective. Jack McBean's been ineffective, I think, when he's been able to play. McInerney in this game in particular. And then Jossie Zardes, it's really the offense is now two people with Gio gone. It's going to be Alessandrini and Boateng. Those guys combine really well. They work together really well. Defenses are going to figure that out. They're going to collapse on those guys. It'll be interesting to see how Alessandrini plays his first time at altitude this week. But the offense is really limited, and I think we went into the season thinking that there were going to be a lot of options, and there just aren't. And by the way, Alessandrini it's become sort of a habit where he does not train early in the week. He misses the first day, sometimes 2 days of training. Today was a day he was not on the field. Galaxy said that he has not been 100% for a long time. He's been dealing with a little bit of a groin issue. So they're trying to save his bullets and don't put him on the field in training heavily all week and just let him play the games. That's something to watch. I mean, you think this team is hurt by injuries now. I think if Kurt Anolfo had his choice, Alessandrini or the eight guys that are on the sidelines, I think he'd rather keep Alessandrini and have those other guys come back when they're ready. If they were to lose Alessandrini to a groin, which could be an issue that could be a month or more, that would really change the complexion of this team.
Yeah, and just to clean everything up, I think we've already talked about it as well, but Jermaine Jones, Daniel Sturrs, both trained off to the side, you told me, and those guys might be a sport in Kansas City, meaning the game this Saturday coming up. Those guys could possibly return then, so the Galaxy might be getting some more bodies back for Saturday. I think that's what everybody's hoping for right now. Is that all correct?
Yes, that's right, and everyone's very much aware of the number of games they have coming up. It's like a game every 3 days for the next 2.5 weeks or so. So everyone is aware that, there's going to be a lot of Galaxy 2 guys that you're going to see, especially in the U.S. Open Cup games. Depth is a real issue on this team. And that's where I was kind of hoping, Saturday, that maybe some of the one place that looked healthy was up front. They looked like they had a lot of forwards, guys that have some experience scoring. Again, McBean, McInerney, Jossie Zardes, none of them came through. And it wound up being right back, the pressure to score wound up being right back where it was with Boateng and Alessandrini, and they both created two chances and wound up combining on the two goals.
Yeah, it was actually the second goal was a pass from Bradford Jamison that almost got to Jose Villarreal, but somehow found its way back to Roman Alessandrini. So that was the tying goal, which, by the way, if you go back and you watch the replays, I've now seen the photometrics that they've done of it in order to actually prove whether Alessandrini was onside or offside. And whenever I looked at the replay and I watched the initial goal, I said, you know, Alessandrini looks like a guy who might be offside there, Kevin. And so far, everything has proven out that he indeed was offside. And there was even some question because the officials, the center referee, went over to his assistant to discuss whether or not there was an offside, onside issue. Now, what I think they were actually discussing, by the way, was whether or not Jose Villarreal got a touch on the ball. Because the ball went close to Jose Villarreal, but it doesn't look like he touches it, and it eventually finds Roman Alessandrini. If Jose Villarreal touches that ball, I think the linesman flags Alessandrini for offside. However, even on the initial ball in, it does look on the replay like it was offside. I know a lot of Houston fans and Houston players were not very happy about that particular call, especially 4 minutes or almost 5 minutes into stoppage time, 90 plus four, and just, you know, basically seconds away from Houston's first road win of the season. None of that happened. It ends up being a draw. The LA Galaxy get the 2-2 draw. I mean, what else is the focus point, I think, from this game, Kevin? Maybe looking at Diop, because if you want to talk about somebody who I thought had a very poor night, I think that Clément Diop was one of those guys. I think he was responsible for both goals, as a matter of fact. There were some other people who were responsible in the midfield for that second goal that that Houston scored. But the first goal absolutely was Clément Diop's fault when DeMarcus Beasley took a shot from about 35 yards out. A good shot, a hard shot, definitely one that he had to make. But the save that happened, or at least the attempted save that was tried to make there, was knocked straight back into the attack of Houston, straight down the middle. And Kevin, you and I have talked about it, I think, at length, even on this show, about European or international goalkeepers versus American goalkeepers and the international goalkeeper's inability to catch some balls. I think an American keeper, and people were telling me this on Twitter, an American keeper catches that ball.
Yeah, one thing before we get away from the Alessandrini thing, when a guy scores a game-tying goal in the 94th minute, generally he celebrates. Watch the replay. The first thing Alessandrini does is look to the sideline official to see if the flag is up. I think that was kind of telling. That was his first response. It wasn't one of joy. It was one of, uh-oh, was I offside? But I talked to Matt Reese about this, the former Galaxy goalkeeping coach who followed Bruce Arena to the national team, and he talked exactly about that, U.S. kids in the U.S. grow up playing sports. All the sports that we play here, you catch the ball, basketball, football, baseball. So a soccer goalkeeper goes into that with sort of that in his DNA, and U.S. goalkeepers tend to catch the ball. They don't give up as many rebounds. Sometimes you'll see a guy like Brian Rowe, he'll tip the ball over the net or punch the ball toward a defender. He does it with purpose. Diop was stood up by that shot, I think definitely surprised by the shot and by how hard it was. And he pushed it, he deflected it right back into the Houston attack where it was easy to score. And you're right, I do think an American goalkeeper on that play catches it just because that's the easiest thing to do when you're surprised. And he was definitely surprised. The number of goals that are scored on rebounds in soccer, it's a lot like hockey. Just a number, the goalie makes the first save, punches it back out to and his defense doesn't react in time because, those guys have their backs turned. They don't see what the goalkeeper's going to do. So it was an easy goal, and you're right. If Diop catches that, the Galaxy wins the game 2-1.
Yeah, and it's one of those. Even if he doesn't, even if you say that it was hit too hard to catch there, Kevin, there needs to be either a tip up and over the bar, or there needs to be a push left or right. You cannot block that ball directly back in. And on the second goal, certainly Jose Villarreal giving the ball up in midfield is not something that can happen in that situation. The Galaxy were pressed forward. They were looking to attack. They had some possession at that time, so everybody was in position, and Jose Villarreal took an unnecessary risk with the ball. Rafa Garcia tried to cover for it by trying to stop the play, and he missed the slide tackle, and then the ball's played out. Then it's Diop's turn to come out and try and stop the second goal from being scored. You're trying to stop Elise from scoring this, and instead of making himself big, and there was a write-up on this on MLSsoccer.com, instead of making himself look big, he instead makes himself small as he comes out and tries to cut down the angle. And really, if you look at that, I mean, that's a rookie goalkeeper mistake. We've talked at length about Diop and how athletic he is, and he can make some unbelievable saves. But the things that happened against Houston are the exact reasons why he's not the LA Galaxy's number one. He may be temporarily, as Brian Rowe continues continues to sort of rehab and get back, and whether or not he'll be back in goal sooner rather than later will all be seen. But right now, it's Diop who's going to get the start. I don't know that Kempin is going to jump Diop for any of these things, but those were preventable mistakes from Clément Diop, and that's one of those things that the Galaxy have to continue to sort of look at and say, you know, does John Kempin give us a better chance of winning than Clément Diop? Because Diop has these sort of issues. So something I think that people are going to certainly watch for and look at as we continue down the road, and even coming up on Wednesday night, you know, who gets the start, who doesn't get the start, all these things are sort of up there. I mentioned Jose Villarreal real quick here, Kevin. Thought he played okay. He was a substitute, came into the game. You know, the three substitutes who came in did have an effect on the game, and I think if you're looking for what you want out of substitutes, that's what you sort of want to see. But Villarreal came in the 61st minute. Houston scored that goal Houston scored in the 74th minute. I got it. So Houston scored in the 74th minute, and the Galaxy get one in the 90+4. So Jose Villarreal had a lot of chances to sort of influence this game, and I didn't see a whole bunch there from him. In terms of that, I thought Ari Lassiter, who put a header off the bar, Kevin, who looked a little more dangerous, who came in the 66th minute for Giassi's Artis, was a more dangerous player on the night. And then Bradford Jameson figured into the final goal as well. So in the 83rd minute, he came in for Rafa Garcia, and eventually that led to the game-tying goal. So in terms of the substitutes and their impact, I thought they all impacted the game one way or another, mostly for the positive, if you want to put the one negative on Jose Villarreal for that particular midfield gaffe.
Well, you know, Lassiter's had some he hasn't played very much this year, but he's had a couple dangerous chances. Was it the Houston game when he also knocked the ball off the bar that would have tied the game? So, you know, so far he's played 28 minutes this year, and he has four shots in 28 minutes. That's pretty good statistic for him. You know, a shot every 7 minutes. Not bad. None of them on goal, but he has hit the woodwork twice. Yeah. That's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
Maybe he should, you know, he's sort of filling that super sub role a little bit. I know we're going to talk about Alan Gordon a little bit like Alan Gordon did, coming on the field, changing the way the game is played and making his presence felt. I wonder if he's going to stay in that role like Boateng did last year, or whether with, as we talked, you know, Jack McInerney and Jack McBean not really you know, making their presence felt too much, whether Ari Lassiter then all of a sudden is going to get some quality and some meaningful minutes, longer than just 2 or 3 minutes at the end of the game.
Yeah, I think of all the substitutes who came on, of all the people who I think could possibly make an effect in Colorado, have some young legs as well. For me, it's Ari Lassiter. I would give him the start in Colorado. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I don't think that's a horrible idea. So for me, if you wanted to play Ari Lassiter, now maybe you're playing a numbers game with bodies and benches and everything, and as we said, Lassiter has come on and influenced the game whenever he does. Do you want to move him out of that role? Do you possibly ruin him by doing that? But, or do you give him more minutes, and with those shots that he's actually getting off, you know, is he more of a benefit on the field for 90 minutes, or, you know, 85 minutes or 75 minutes, however long, but you definitely give him the start. So I think that Ari Lassiter has an upside to him. I'd like to see him get some more minutes. Other than that, I don't know what the LA Galaxy currently, as the team is constituted, will do about this offensive issue that they have. Because again, no other striker besides Giovanni Dos Santos, and in a lot of ways, he's not really playing a striker role. He's usually playing a creative midfield role, and he's a late runner into the box. But the Galaxy haven't had a striker score yet in MLS play. You know, from the run of play, nothing has happened there from that striker position. Doesn't matter who you've put in it, they've been either on an island or unable to sort of, you know, get anything going. And for me, I thought Jack McInerney was almost, you know, forgotten up there. Again, it's the same thing we've said over and over again, Kevin. I mean, when Jack McBean started, it seemed like he would disappear in the game. When Giassi's Artis was up in that position, he would disappear from the game. Is it the strikers, or is it the way the Galaxy play? Are they not utilizing that number nine? I'm starting to believe that it is the personnel, that it is not a formation, that it's not an issue, and that a striker needs to sort of make their presence known, and the Galaxy have not had that at all. But that's the biggest issue, I think, right now for the LA Galaxy.
Yeah, especially with Gio gone. I mean, there's a gaping hole there to be filled, and you talk about Diop with Brian Rowe out. You know, this is his opportunity, and, you know, the guys play their whole lives dreaming, all I want is a chance to show people what I can do, and this is where Diop has to step up and seize it, or McInerney or McBean up front. This is the time where you say, hey, the team needs someone to step up and do this. They need someone to fill this role. They need someone to change the way defenses play against us, or in case of Diop, to change the way people attack us. You know, these opportunities don't come very often, and it's far too easy for Curtinoffel to go back to Brian Rowe, for example, and not really give Diop much of a second thought. He was the guy who was going to be the goalkeeper of the future, and this was his opportunity, and he's not seizing it. And you can say the same thing about the guys up front. You know, when you do watch some of the strikers that they put in there, one of the things I've noticed is it seems like they get behind the defense. I mean, correct me where I'm wrong. It seems like they get behind the defense, and the defenders on the opposing team simply turn their back on them. It's like, we know you're not going to do anything, so we're not even going to worry about you. We're going to play against the other 10 guys on the field.
Yeah, I think for a lot of the LA Galaxy strikers, and one of my biggest pet peeves, and the person who does this the best out of any of the strikers that the Galaxy have is probably Jack McBean, but it's the runs off the back shoulder of these guys, and it's putting themselves or putting those defenders in an uncomfortable position to start with. A lot of the Galaxy runs, and especially from Giassi's art of this year, have started in front of, with the eyes of the defender on them, and that's easy to track, and it's easy to sort of see. You don't seem a dangerous threat whenever they can see you all the time. So if, for me, I'm looking for those back shoulder runs, those runs that start behind the defense, that trying to take advantage of the slimmest of lines in terms of offside. I mean, the LA Galaxy, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, because I watch these games, they don't get called for offside very often. I'd have to go look at the stats in terms of how much they've been called offside, but it doesn't feel like they're ones who are constantly testing that front line of the defense. And up to a certain point, I think you need to have some of those offside calls. You need to get the defense sort of thinking that, you know, one of these times you're going to be onside. It's going to be close. But as you keep being offside, it's testing. There's also plays where I sit there and say, you know, that some teams have too many offside calls, and it drives people absolutely insane. But I'd like to see the LA Galaxy and whoever is in that striker role testing that line more, because the number nine striker that they're trying to play is this hold-up striker, which is fine. You can do that, but give me somebody with some variance, some depth. Jozy Altidore can play a number nine. He can hold and distribute, right? But he's also a guy who occasionally slips back behind somebody's back shoulder and scores a goal from a ball over the top. So those are the things that I think the Galaxy are lacking right now, and I don't see anybody who's really able to fill it. And I think, perhaps, Kevin, that leads us into, you know, just sort of where we think the LA Galaxy, because the most common question we're going to get, and we're going to continue to get as the summer is approaching, is, you know, who are the LA Galaxy going to go out and get? And in my mind right now, Kevin, they are focused on a striker. They're focused on a number nine, a playmaker that can score goals, because they clearly, up to this point, have had nobody fill that role. That is at least, they've talked about going after positions of need, Kevin. And for me, this is their greatest need. I look at all the injuries and I say, yes, there's some other needs, okay? But their greatest need right now is that they don't have anybody in that striker position. And it's one of those areas that if you sign a designated player as a striker, that they can seriously impact the team.
Well, you know what, Josh Gessman, ask and you shall receive. I just looked up the stats. The LA Galaxy is last, 22nd in the 22 team MLS in offside calls with 15.
See, did you see how I had not looked up those stats? I want everybody to know this was not a plant. All right, we didn't plan on talking about this. I was just thinking as I was talking that the Galaxy never get called for offside.
And the number one team in offsides with more than three times as many calls as the Galaxy. Chicago Fire, 47 offside calls. Now they are the only team in the league with a longer unbeaten streak with the Galaxy than the Galaxy. And the unbeaten streak started, by the way, in the same game, the 2-2 draw May 6th at the StubHub Center. So Chicago Fire, the number two team in the league, has the most offside calls, the Galaxy with the fewest. And you're right, you know, the Galaxy should have more offside calls simply because of how many fast players they have. And it seems to me that those are the calls that sometimes the sideline officials miss, because the guy is just so fast, the sideline official looks up and says, there's no way Boateng got there if he was onside.
Right.
He couldn't have created that much space between him and the last defender unless he was offside. Therefore, the flag goes up. So you have, you know, the Galaxy with fast players that tend to lead to incorrect offside calls. They're not even getting those, and they're certainly not creating offside calls, you know, correctly judged, right? You know,
right.
With the slower players they have. I'm not quite sure what the point I'm trying to make is. It's just, I agree with you. They should have more offside calls, especially with the personnel they have. 15, that's It's not very good. That's about one a game.
Well, and here is even more information. The leading goal scorer in Major League Soccer is Chicago Fire's Nikolic, who has 13 goals scored so far in Major League Soccer this year. So perhaps being called offside, because it is him who gets called offside most of the time, whenever you watch the Chicago Fire games, perhaps being offside more will show that the LA Galaxy are testing that defense more, and they're not doing it right now. It's certainly something that that sticks out to me. Transfer rumors, as we were sort of saying, looking at a striker, possibly. There's nothing new on this front. I don't think that there's anything that really can be shared. I asked Chris Klein if Dario Benedetto and Cristiano Ronaldo were already on their way, and he told me that they'd have no comment on that. So at least he didn't get a straight up no. Although you certainly got a fun answer, I think, on Cristiano Ronaldo as well. But I mean, you know, some of these are not realistic. We understand some of them are not. I think Benedetto is a realistic option. I think that if that progresses and that deal progresses, that something could possibly happen. Chris Klein, in my conversation, it was just him and I talking. In our conversation, I said, you know, if you were sort of a betting man, do you think he would sign somebody? And so he said yes, that they would sign somebody, you know, in the summer transfer window. That's what he was guessing. All right.
Well, so, yes. Josh Kissman, I have even more news.
Go.
I was talking to Yella Von Dom today about the young players coming back, and I said something to the effect of, when you get all these guys back, it'll be like the transfer window opened and you got five players, meaning that when Sebastian Legette and Baggio comes back, it just gives them more options. And these are players that they've played with without all year, and all of a sudden they join them in August about the time of the transfer window. I'm not sure how much of that Yella completely understood, but he responded with, oh, yes, we're getting the player in the summer transfer window. So he acted as if, oh, yeah, somebody's definitely coming. And I think the Galaxy, looking at it, have to look at it and say, look, if – and I'm just throwing names out here. I don't know, you know, if any of this is possible or not. But let's just say they're thinking about Ibrahimovic, and he's not going to come until January because of the injury and everything. He's going to have to be a DP. So do the Galaxy look at that and say, look, this is the guy we really want. We're just going to bite the bullet on the rest of the season, because if we sign Benedetto, then we don't have any DPs left to sign Ibrahimovic next year. So do they look at it and say, look, we need a guy right now. We need to get Dario in here. We need to turn this thing around and get going in the right direction. And we'll see what happens in January and see what we can work out. Because remember, they already have Alessandrini signed to a multiple year deal. They have Gio until 2019. So the next DP, that's going to be their DPs for a while. So they have to decide, do they want maybe one of these big, big, big name guys they're thinking about, but they won't get him until the winter? Or do they need somebody right now to get them through this season and then, you know, continue on? I did ask Jovan Karowski about Cristiano Ronaldo jokingly about that. And I said, you guys, you know, despite all the rumors, you can't bring him in because the number 7 jersey is already taken. And he said, we're saving number 9 for him. But then he went on to say that he wasn't sure that ownership would be willing to give 90% of the franchise to one player, meaning that would he'd have to become a part owner of the team for the team to be able to afford him. I really do think that the Galaxy are not taking that seriously at all. And you do – this is the time of the year when all the rumors are going to come. Any time a player in Europe of any kind of worth is linked to MLS, he is immediately linked to the Galaxy, because that's the team that people in Europe know. They don't know about the Colorado Rapids. They don't know about Columbus. So they think about the Galaxy. Oh, so-and-so wants to go play in America. It's got to be the Galaxy. There's no attempt, I think, on the part of some of our European brethren to actually flesh out whether this is a possible deal. So you're going to hear the Galaxy linked to virtually everybody over in Europe. And you have to sort of step back and say, wait a minute, does this make sense? Can this guy fit under the MLS salary cap, you know, even as a designated player? Is this the kind of guy that the Galaxy needs? You know, ask those questions first before you jump to the conclusion. I don't think Cristiano Ronaldo is coming to MLS right now. I don't think he's coming to the Galaxy. I think he will eventually, but it's a year before World Cup. This guy just won 3 of the last 4 European championships. I don't think he's leaving Real Madrid right now anyways, but if he did, would he come to the Galaxy the year before a World Cup? I don't think so. So think about that too. You know, the older players may not figure in their national teams, may not be training for the World Cup. He certainly is. He's got a good Portuguese team that is the, you know, won the European championships. They think they got a shot in the World Cup. So he's not coming now.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, again, you talk about what did the Galaxy need, right? And so there's reports right now that the LA Galaxy are reportedly interested in Arsenal goalkeeper Davidas Ospina, right? The 28-year-old plays for Arsenal, but doesn't get much playing time. You know, and you sit there and go, one, do the LA Galaxy need another goalkeeper? They have three. They have two healthy ones right now. One will be on the mend. They'll have three again. They certainly seem like they're perfectly capable of competing in Major League Soccer with the three goalkeepers that they have. And then, two, would the LA Galaxy then spend what I would imagine would be a designated player spot on Ospina in order to bring him in for goal? So do any of those things make sense to me? And I have to say, no, they don't make sense. And, Kevin, you brought up the good point about Clément Diop. I think in our phone call earlier is that if they were really interested in a designated player goalkeeper, you know, then maybe perhaps they're lying when they say that Clément Diop is the goalkeeper of the future.
Right. And Ospina is a guy that can, you know, he's young, he'll be around for a number of years, but do you use a DP spot on a goalkeeper? Very few teams have done that. I think Montreal did it a couple of years ago.
Colorado.
Yep. Colorado's doing it now with Tim Howard. Do you use a designated player spot on a goalkeeper? I would argue right now that the Galaxy's biggest need is for a striker, and they have told us, both you and I repeatedly, that we are going to use our DP spots for need. We're not going to address, get the biggest name or the best athlete or a guy who maybe is, you know, we're pretty good at center back. We're not going to get a center back. They're going to go for need, and the need right now is for a striker, not a goalkeeper.
Yeah, and so, again, maybe they see their needs differently, though, Kevin. I mean, certainly we're not in the boardroom making decisions. I think it would be a lot more interesting if we were, by the way. But nonetheless, it is. And if you look at, you know, the LA Galaxy, would they consider getting somebody like a midfielder, like Jonathan Dos Santos, who was rumored to be coming into the LA Galaxy at one point or another to join his brother? And you look at how many midfielders the LA Galaxy have. Now, granted, most of them are injured. Most of them are long-term injured. But at the same time, do you want to add another body to that long list? Eventually, you would think these guys do come back, or at least the majority of these guys come back and are able to play again. Sebastian Legette seems like that's certainly going to be the case. You know, Jermaine Jones is going to be back on the field sooner rather than later. And then you have Bajo Husidic, who was probably more than capable of playing some more after his injury heals. So do you want to crowd the midfield now for something that right now it looks like you're surviving with and you're not doing a horrible job? Now, I was also the person who was just criticizing the midfield, saying they did absolutely nothing on the night. And so maybe that is a need. Maybe that's a secondary need, Kevin.
Well, you know, we talk about Benedetto, and he's a guy that does fill some needs now, and he's playing right now. He's fit, although you wonder why a lot of the Galaxy, as we've heard, we've been told, a lot of the Galaxy front office people, Jovan in particular, have been going to Europe. So I don't know how that figures in the Benedetto thing. But one thing I want to say about Benedetto is he is not a huge name. He's a big name, but he's not a great big, you know, Wayne Rooney type name. But he would fit a need and he would help out immediately. And one of the things that I was told by the previous member of the Galaxy coaching staff is that the coaching staff was not in favor of Steven Gerrard coming over. I haven't been able to verify this because no one will talk about it, but I was told that that was primarily a front office thing. This guy will sell a lot of shirts, he'll put butts in seats. He's a big name. We got to get him. The coaching staff was like, this guy doesn't fit in with our team at all. Coaching staff proved right on that. The coaching staff was a little bit more enthusiastic about Gio. But that signing, too, was driven primarily by the front office, the things Gio can do, both on and off the field. And so coaching staff is a little bit warmer to that. My point is the Gerrard thing went so spectacularly south and was, I think, universally decried as a disaster. I think now that management's going to work with the coaching staff and say, and the front office, the people on site at StubHub, and say, what do you need? And they're going to say, we don't need a big name. We need a productive player. And so maybe that's another reason to sort of lower your sights and don't look at every four-time World Cup all-star when you're thinking about who the Galaxy are going to get. But look at what do the Galaxy need? You know, Alessandrini, no one heard of Alessandrini, right? I'd never heard of him. Right. And then he comes over here and he's the best player on the team. The year before that, Van Damme was a guy I hadn't heard of before, best player on the team. I think the Galaxy are learning the lesson that it's about what you do on the field and not necessarily the name on the back of the shirt.
Yeah, and that's an important part of it. I think it is both. But I agree with you, Kevin, that certainly right now they need somebody to impact them on the field if they're going to have any hopes for this season. I mean, we're getting to the midway point. It is approaching rapidly. Whether or not the LA Galaxy can do anything with the remainder of their games, they still have time to do so. They're not horribly out of position in order to make a run, but they need to get healthy. They need to start scoring goals, and they need to have those goals come from somebody not named Emmanuel Boateng or Roman Alessandrini. Giovanni Dos Santos can start scoring some more goals whenever he gets back. That's fine, and you can get in if you could get another offensive weapon there. I think that having a three-person attack with Alessandrini, with Giovanni Dos Santos, and with whoever this third person could be, a dangerous option. You add in some goals by Boateng, and then possibly get some midfield help there by Jermaine Jones, who I certainly believe is going to be starting as soon as he's healthy again and can get in there to play. If you can start combining those things and getting some things together, I think you might have something from the LA Galaxy, but we're going to have to wait and see. Let's get some questions here. We had some questions from some listeners who hit us up on Twitter. We'll do a couple of those, and then we'll give you a real quick preview of the Colorado game coming up on Wednesday, because, of course, this podcast will be the only one you'll get before Wednesday's games, the LA Galaxy travel over to the Colorado Rapids. Let's see. Well, our first question is from @RogueLeaderLA, and he says and asks, any concerns about Alessandrini missing Monday practice? And I think we addressed that, Kevin, but you want to take that one?
Yeah, he's been doing that a lot lately. It's just primarily the Galaxy trying to save the bullets. He's dealing with a little bit of a groin issue. Apparently, it's nagging. It won't go away. And Kurt Onofo said he hasn't been at 100% for a few weeks now. So I think the Galaxy are just trying to rest him and make sure he does. Remember, they've had a number of guys, Diallo, Rowe, these guys getting hurt in training. And so they want to make sure that doesn't happen to Alessandrini. It's kind of the equivalent of putting him in bubble wrap in between games.
Right. And let's face it, he's a veteran player. He's played international. He's played, all his life. He's 27 years old. He's one of the older guys. And he's had a ton of miles put on his legs, and he wasn't exactly playing at Marseille. So all of a sudden, he has been ramped up into form, and he is one of the guys who absolutely works the hardest on the field almost every single game. Between him and Boateng, there's guys who are just absolutely leave everything out on the field. So that being said, I think any rest you can give him, it's certainly not going to hurt the training. Not a lot of training is going to get done, Kevin. We've talked about this in this ridiculously busy schedule that the Galaxy have. You're going to play a game once every 3 or 4 days. You're not doing a whole bunch of training. You're doing some recovery. You're doing some conditioning. And other than that, you're getting to the next game, and that's how things are going to worry. So I would not worry about Roman Alessandrini. He should be ready to play on Wednesday for the LA Galaxy. Let's go to @BenRobles, and Ben says, how much or recent success should be credited to Kurt, and how much is individual efforts leading the team to success? So how much of this team's unbeaten streak, let's take the 7 games that they have had right now, Kevin, how much is that should we put on Kurt's shoulders, and how much is that just on the team or individuals coming together finally?
You know what? I'm going to take a flyer on this one. I'm going to say it's Kurt. And think back to the Chicago game, the banners, fire Kurt, people calling for him to be let go and coaching change right then. It was an ugly atmosphere. It seems like it was 100 years ago now, but it was a couple months ago, and it was pretty bad. That was the game where Jermaine got hurt. Kurt took Yella Van Damme out in the first half. A lot of players have told me that was what changed. Yella Van Damme said everybody was waiting for something. There's always a turning point in every season. Everyone knew it was coming. Something was going to happen. It just so happened the focus was on him when it did happen. But, Kurt has said that's when the team became his. That's when the players realized that there was one guy calling the shots and that nobody, even the captain and your best player, was not immune from being benched if he wasn't performing. And that's when people started to get the message that this was serious, that we're not playing around here. Kurt said there was a lot of stuff that going into the season, new coach, new coaching staff, a lot of new players, a lot of young players, there was a lot they had to get through. He wasn't making excuses for the first couple of months, but he was just saying that they were dealing with a lot of stuff. And then all of a sudden it got to that game in Chicago where it's like, okay, this is 2 months. This is too long. We should be better than this right now. Kurt took some pretty bold moves, and I think they paid off. I think the players started to pay attention to him. Yella, the one that all the focus was on, the one that was pulled, he played his very best game of the season the next week against the New York Red Bulls. That was a big turnaround for him. And a couple weeks after that, he had that game in San Jose. Remember when he was running around pointing to the crest?
Right.
Playing for the Galaxy. So I give Kurt a lot of credit. The players were the same. In fact, the players – If anything, the lineup is less now. If we talk about less talented, less experienced, the lineup is less now than it was in those first couple of games because of all the injuries. So he's winning with younger guys because I think his message got through and the veterans are now supporting him. I do think there might have been a little bit of a split in the locker room before that. They came out of that Chicago game united, and they haven't lost since. Yeah. I put it on Kurt.
Yeah, and you know, I tend to agree with you. I don't, and I'll be one of these that I don't know if you can separate it because, you know, Kurt can't go out and make the passes, and Kurt can't make the plays. So it's one of those things that he has to be able to inspire the players, and then it's up to the players to give their individual effort. So I certainly think the individual effort is there, but I think that it has been the inspiration or at least the guiding force from Kurt Anolfo and the coaching staff that have seen this team. And Kevin, you bring up a great point about the younger team still getting results, even through all these injuries. I mean, we've seen a just unbelievable amount of injuries for this team. And even during the 7-game unbeaten streak, they have so far remained pretty strong on that. 3 wins, 4 draws in those 7 games. So not great results, but it's still 7 games where they haven't lost a game. So that's not horrible. They need to get better at home. That's certainly something I think they're all working on, but an away game on Wednesday still to come. Let's get to maybe one or two more questions. Cameron asks, two questions. One is, he says, and I guess the first one is a statement almost. He says, not quite sure McInerney did the job on Saturday. Who starts up on top on Wednesday? And do you think Diop did enough to keep the starting role, or should Kempin step in? Both things we've already touched on in this show, but I will tell you that if it was me, and I've already said this, Ariel Lassiter starts on Wednesday night up top to see if you can get something out of him, because I agree with you. I do not think McInerney did. What do you think about Diop, Kevin? You think Diop still slots in on Wednesday?
Yeah, I think he does. I'm not sure that they have a ton of confidence in Kempin. You know, he did have the one shutout, but then, you know, I thought he might have hurt himself more than he helped himself in that U.S. Open Cup game. I think he made a lot of poor decisions, and his defenders really had to help him out. They cleared at least 2 balls, Romney won, and I think Rafa Garcia, the other one, cleared them off the line. There would have been easy goals. It could, you know, very easily Orange County could have tied that game 3-3. So I you know, I think Kempin might have hurt himself in that game. I want to go back to Lassiter, though. You're right. Lassiter, fresh legs, young guy. But I'm wondering, Colorado is such a difficult place with the altitude and everything else. McInerney's played there before. He does have not a ton of experience, but he has played there before as an MLS player. I wonder if that factors into it, like, don't put too much on Ari Lassiter's plate at one time. Don't make him deal with starting the game for the first time this year, trying to take up the slack for an offense that's been lacking, especially up front, and do all that at altitude. I wonder if the safer choice would be to put McInerney in there, at least let him start the game, and if he doesn't do a good job, then bring Lassiter in off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, all that. Listen, do I expect Ari Lassiter to play on Wednesday night? I'm not sure I do. I could see a case for him being made. There's a good chance that it's either Jack McInerney or Jack McBean that gets a start. I could even see Kurt throwing Jose Villarreal in there, which I think would be a mistake, but in my, you know, just looking at how all those guys played and trying to get something going, Lassiter for me had a lot of the momentum going forward. I would like to see him possibly get some more time, some more minutes. Maybe that means he comes on a little bit earlier. Maybe he gets a couple more minutes in a substitution role. All of those things could possibly happen. Let's see. I will ask a final one from Jason at Rich Backgrounds on Twitter. He says, with the amount of injuries the Galaxy have, will they panic buy anyone just to have another body on the team? Do you think there's panic going on with the LA Galaxy right now, despite all these injuries?
No, I think if anything, I think it's exactly the opposite. I think they consider themselves pretty lucky to be where they're at. And I think that's taken some of the pressure off the front office. Now, you know, the summer transfer window is just opening, so there's not much they could have done before this. But I think they're going into this maybe not overconfident, maybe not sort of arrogant, but going into it realizing they have some time, that they don't have to grab the first guy that expresses an interest, that things are going better than expected. They're right in there. You know, they're really a point out of a playoff spot right now, and they have a lot of home games coming up. If they even become a decent team at home, not even the dominant team of the past, even if become a decent team at home, they've got a pretty good shot of getting in the playoffs. And the one thing I will say, I know it's very early. We're not even to the halfway point of the season. But as Seattle and Portland showed the last couple of years, all you really got to do is get into the playoffs. And then this team has shown with this unbeaten streak, 8 games in all competitions now, 7 in MLS. This team has shown that it can go on a run and it can be really, really good for a couple of weeks on end. That's the kind of team that does well in the playoffs. Just get in And then you've already proven that you can be good for 2 months at a time, and that's all it takes.
Well, we'll get to see everybody again on Saturday. The LA Galaxy will face off against Sporting Kansas City on Saturday, June 24th, 2017. That's a 7:30 p.m. kickoff time, Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes. That's the Saturday game. But the Galaxy will travel away to Colorado Rapids and the Altitude there in Denver Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. This is a 6 p.m. Pacific kickoff time, Spectrum Sportsnet, Spectrum Deportes, where you can find it on television. The Colorado Rapids, Kevin, coming off of a 2-1 win, a goal scored late in regulation by none other than former LA Galaxy player and a guy who loves to score late goals and take his shirt off. Alan Gordon got the goal that lifted the Colorado Rapids over the Portland Timbers. This is the third win in a row for the Colorado Rapids now, Kevin, a team that looked like they were cemented down to the bottom of the Western Conference, and now it looks like perhaps that they're starting to put some things together. So they have a three-game winning streak that they've put together, and now it looks like the LA Galaxy has their seven-game unbeaten streak and four-game road unbeaten streak all put on sort of the table as they face off against Colorado. Colorado is 10th in the Western Conference, 5-8-1, 14 games played, 16 points. Their home record is 5-2-1. The LA Galaxy are 7th in the Western Conference, 5-5-4, 14 games played, 19 points, and a road record of 4-2-1. They have the most wins in Major League Soccer on the road, the LA Galaxy do, and so they're looking to perhaps continue the unbeaten streak against a team that it looks like they're on a little bit of a rise and feeling pretty good.
Well, that I think that home record is really important for Colorado, 5-2-1. As you said, they you know, three wins in a row. Their last loss at home was May 5th, so that's been over a month. But, you know, Colorado's only scored 14 goals. Only one team in MLS, DC United, scored fewer goals. So it's going to be a one-goal game. It's going to be tight. You know, if you're looking at this in a non-biased form, you look at Tim Howard versus Diop, who I think will start for the Galaxy. Got to give a big edge there to Colorado. The other thing, too, is the Galaxy, they're going to fly in late Tuesday. So they're going to be in Colorado about 24 hours before they take the field for the game. There are two schools of thought in how to deal with altitude. One says, get the, you know, be at altitude for a couple of weeks, get yourself totally acclimated to it, work out hard. And then, you know, your body has adjusted if you give yourself a couple of weeks. That's what the U.S. national team did before they went to play in Mexico. And before they had that qualifier with Trinidad, they started camp in Denver, then they went to Salt Lake, came back to Denver, went to Mexico City, and they seem to do okay. The other school of thought is get in and get out. Get there 24 hours before your event, play the event, and get out of there. And that way your body doesn't – your body still has some of its sea-level air in the lungs. I think that's part of the theory. That's what the Galaxy is trying to do. They really don't have a choice, you know, having only a couple of days between games. But one thing I look at is – so some of the players the Galaxy has Alessandrini's never played at altitude before. He's from Marseille. That's a port city. He's going to altitude for the first time. I'm sure he's heard about it. I'm sure he's read about it. I'm sure he's taken all the precautions. It's one thing to do that, and then it's another thing to play in that kind of situation. So I wonder what's going to happen to him. João Pedro, as far as I know, has never played at altitude either. He's from Portugal. So those guys are going to have a big adjustment, and that's why I'm wondering if Curtinoffel plays it safe and maybe goes with some players who may not have been his first choice, except for the fact that they have some experience and they've played at altitude before. You can go throughout this whole lineup. I don't know how much Galaxy 2 gets to altitude, but you know, you're going to have a lot of young guys. Nathan Smith's going to be out there again. Arellano, if he's healthy, if his nose isn't broken, he's going to be out there again. Ashley Cole talked about it, and Steven Gerrard, the first time they went to Colorado to play at altitude, and they said it was much more of a shock to the system than they had anticipated. So I think that's something to watch, too. The Galaxy may actually be the better team at a neutral site, but going to altitude brings with it its own problems, and some of the best players in the Galaxy have never dealt with it before.
Yeah, you talked about goal scoring. Dominic Baggi and Kevin Doyle are the leading goal scorers for the Colorado Rapids. 4 for Baggi, 3 for Kevin Doyle. The LA Galaxy's leading goal scorers, Roman Alessandrini, 7 goals, and Giovanni Dos Santos with 6 goals. Emmanuel Boateng now with 2 goals. By the way, Boateng getting his first goal against a team not named Real Salt Lake in the Houston game. Always a good thing. And another cleanup note from the beginning part. Roman Alessandrini named to the MLS Team of the Week. Ashley Cole not named to the MLS Team of the Week. One of these days, Ashley Cole is actually going to get recognized for what he wants to do. I will tell you that I hope it's not. Nobody recognizes him until after the MLS All-Star game because I'm of the opinion that another game for the LA Galaxy or another game your players can play in for the LA Galaxy at this point is completely unnecessary. And so it's a, I think if you're an LA Galaxy supporter or fan, then you should look at this and say, I don't want any LA Galaxy players going to the All-Star game. I think Roman Alessandrini and Giovanni Dos Santos are two players who will probably end up there. Outside of that, I think the Galaxy might be safe, but just FYI, don't expect the Galaxy to get completely away from this, but it would be nice if those guys could have a rest instead of having to play that particular game. So just another thing to sort of keep your mind on as the LA Galaxy's busy schedule continues, but Roman Alessandrini rightfully named to MLS Team of the Week, and probably not the last time that he will be named to it either. Both, I think he and Emmanuel Boateng had absolutely amazing games against Houston, and I would expect that hopefully they can both recover in time. Now, one thing about the young legs and the younger sort of version of this LA Galaxy team that's playing right now, Kevin, is that you would hope that they'd be able to recover a lot quicker from these short turnarounds. So I think that going to altitude is going to be interesting, and Colorado's a very defensive team, usually scores one or two goals a game. Don't be surprised if it's a tie game late in the game if Alan Gordon comes on, and you know how former LA Galaxy players love to score on the LA Galaxy. So it'll be interesting to watch. But again, this game kicks off at 6 p.m. You can get the game on Time Warner Cable Sportsnet, or excuse me, Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes. They changed that a while ago. I should finally get on that and sort of see where everything goes on this. All right, Kevin, anything else you want to talk about that game, or you think we're good? Think we covered everything?
No, but I just want to give some more props to Ashley Cole. I mean, you look at that back line. He's the only guy on that back line that I believe had more than 14 MLS starts. He's been solid all year. Guys have been coming in and out. Yellow's played well, played poorly. Guys are getting hurt. Ashley Cole's really been the unsung hero. You're right. He's not getting any attention outside LA because it's very difficult as a left back. You know, what sort of do you put on your resume to show how well you've played? You have to actually see the game and understand how well the guys played. But here's another one of these big European stars that came over, didn't sell a lot of shirts, didn't do a lot of promotional work, just kind of quietly showed up every day, worked hard, became a team leader. I know that he's a guy that some of those younger players look up to. I mean, it's Ashley Cole. He's the greatest left back in the history of the English national team. And the Galaxy got really lucky. I think they did a lot of homework on this guy before they brought him over. And I think he's, and even with having done all that homework, I think he's far better than they expected him to be.
Yeah, and I think Cardinolfo was even saying after the game, you know, this guy doesn't look like he's, you know, 36, 37 years old. He's even 38 now. I mean, he keeps getting older every time I look at him. And the guy continues to just play like there's no tomorrow. So Ashley Cole has been everything and more. And the amount of money that the LA Galaxy are paying him, they're absolutely stealing him for his resume and what he has done. Ashley Cole has been absolutely great. And he was the captain for this team against Houston as well. I think that was the first time he's ever been named captain for the LA Galaxy. Maybe that's just because there were so many people injured, he was next on the list. There's like we're 8 or 9 deep at captain now for the LA Galaxy in terms of who they announce every game. So it'll be interesting to see how everybody sort of travels over to Colorado. All right, let's see. If you're looking for Mr. Kevin Baxter, you can go ahead and find him at KBaxter11 on Twitter. And if you're looking for him at the LA Times, latimes.com, go find all of his writings, all of the articles he does on soccer and specifically the LA Galaxy can be found right there. We're very lucky to have him. Glad he's always here on Mondays to talk about the game with us. Great insight from him in terms of all the stuff he's bringing from training as well. If you're looking for me on Twitter, at Jay Gessman, at Galaxy Podcast. That's both of the places you can find me. Of course, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Read all of our articles. We have our game recaps. We'll have a game preview coming up of Colorado versus LA and any other information we pick up between now and kickoff time. We'll also have a live show on Thursday night, so make sure you're there for Thursday night's live show as we get you ready to get that game on Saturday against Sporting Kansas City and also recap the Colorado game. Hopefully, the LA Galaxy can remain unbeaten at the very least for 8 games instead of the 7 they're on right now. All right, for Mr. Kevin Baxter, I'm Josh Gessman, and you've been listening to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com, and we will catch you next time.
You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy from the Box podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast. And be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, goodbye, everyone.